All right. And we're back. Welcome back to another episode of A Businessman's Guide to Almost Everything, the show where I, your host, Cole Brzezinski, get to sit down with interesting people from a myriad of fields. We got to take apart what they're doing, what makes them tick, and some of the challenges that they face. With me today, I have someone new. Would you introduce yourself, where you're from, and what you do?
All right. Thanks, Cole. Very happy to be here. My name is Cody Call, and I am the executive director of Growing Veterans. And I'm from Ridgefield, Washington, so down south, and I've been in Bellingham since 2019.
All right. So we had Logan, who is community director, was that
correct?
Right?
Correct, yes.
So he was here telling us a little bit about what Growing Veterans is and what they do. But briefly, can you tell the good audience again, what is Growing Veterans?
So Growing Veterans, we are basically two nonprofits in one. So what we're really working on is we're working on the mental health of veterans, and then we're also fighting food scarcity. So we are donating all of our organic produce to the local food banks.
All right. So let's talk about the services that you guys do for the veterans, because I know that was so much of that starting point, keeping veterans in mind. So Logan may mention that you guys do dirt therapy. What does dirt therapy look like? What do you guys do for the veterans that volunteer at the farm?
So it's an ever-evolving process. So right now we are in a harvesting, and so we're going to have veterans coming out. And so they'll come out in the morning, they'll check in, and we tailor it to whatever they need. So if someone is needing their own time, their own space, we can find some activities where they can do it out in the field and be alone. Or we can do, I like to call it parallel play. Mm-hmm. So we'll get, people out there that don't really want to open up, and we'll just put two people together, and then you're just working side by side. And then it's really interesting as you're getting your hands in the dirt, as you're harvesting, as you're weeding, you just see people start to soften, and then they start to share and open up. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like with children, you know, when we put them together and they're playing side by side, and then slowly they become friends and come together. That's what we're trying to create, that sense of safety, that sense of belonging, and an area where we hold a container where people can be vulnerable and they're not judged.
Mm. No, that's beautiful. So I've gotten to know a bunch of people that are in the non-for-profit world. And every time I talk to them, one more of them has lost a job.
Yes.
It seems to be a really rough place right now, our current market, to be in the non-for-profit world. I can only imagine that only accentuates the challenges that veteran societies have already been facing already. So what are some of the challenges that you guys have been facing this year in 2025?
This year, I mean, it's been really scary at first. So when I came on in March, we had 3.5 months of funding. We didn't know how we were going to get through the growing season. But then we reached out to community members, to business partnerships, and we were able to find the funding. So like right now we're sitting in the middle of harvest season. We have 6 months of funding right now, which will carry us through to the end. And we're actively writing grants, and we're doing plant sales and silent auctions and those type of things to where we can become self-sufficient. But honestly, the only way that we're going to be able to survive for another 15 years, another 20 years, or far into the future is going to be cultivating that sense of community within our donor pool. So finding the community members that have service members in their family, cousins, fathers, sisters, and realize the impact that we can have and the lives that we can save. Once they see that and they see the impact of $1 a month, $5 a month, $10 a month, that's going to push us through for the next 10 to 15 years.
Now, when I was talking to Logan last, we were talking about a specialized training that you guys offer or that you facilitate. Peer support training, was that right?
Yes.
So one of the things that he made mention of was that one of the goals was to increase the frequency you guys could offer this from 4 months to 6 months, or sorry, once every quarter, so every 3 months, four times a year, to once every other month, six times a year. That, however, that's been pushed back a little bit because you guys, on a short notice, it seems like, had some funding that you thought you were going to have made no longer available.
Correct.
What have those processes been like? Are those just grants that are drying up faster than you expected?
Yes. So we had some grants that were dedicated just for funding the peer support training. Because what we want to do is we want this training available and we want it free. Mm. We don't want it to be at cost for anyone, because as soon as you put a barrier in front of anyone, that just limits the amount of people that you're going to be able to access. And we want everything on the farm accessible to everyone, no matter who you are, no matter what your background is, we want it to be available to you. And so the way that we're trying to combat that right now is we're going to start offering the peer support training. We're going to start offering it at the farm. So at our location, we'll just shut down operations for a day or two, and then we'll run the training there. So we have one coming up in September. It'll be our pilot on the farm peer support training. So we'll host it for 10 to 15 people free of charge, and it's going to be a 3-day session.
All right. So as you guys are trying to expand your support base, something that has to happen for every business or organization that not only wants to grow, but wants to survive the next 10 years, you always have to be growing. You may mention that a lot of the support that you guys are finding is in the families of veterans. On a larger level, we're in Whatcom County. Have you found that the county has been particularly keen to support veteran societies?
Yes. Whatcom County and Island County have, they've really just championed for us, and they've come up and they've really helped support us. And I think not only do they want to support veterans, but here in Whatcom County and Island County in the Pacific Northwest, we know the benefit of organic produce. And so when they see that we have the dual mission of helping veterans and, oh my goodness, you guys are also filling up the food banks with organic produce, it's a lot of people, they can either find that they really align with one of two, or they align with both. And so it's a pretty good way to get people to see the important work that we're able to do.
It's a great merging of needs.
Yes.
Yeah. So who are the people that you find tend to be either your most frequent or your most valuable supporters? Is it the families of veterans, or do you find that businesses are really coming forward to just pour back into the community?
I mean, I really feel like it's just like this amazing mesh of both. So we're getting the business support, Woods Coffee. They support us every single Friday when we do our coffee check-in. They donate the coffee for us. So it's just another way to see that this amazing business that is here sees the value in our work, and they really do want to help us with that.
That's brilliant. So let's take a step back and keeping our eyes on the veterans still, though. It feels like when I'm watching the news, every now and then, usually around elections, the issues of veteran affairs comes up. How are veterans being treated? How are they being taken care of? From your estimation, how are the veterans being taken care of? Are they receiving the resources that they need, or is this just a topical issue that some people take advantage of?
That's a great question. I feel like right now there are more resources and benefits for veterans than there ever has been in the past. But that being said, the barriers are there. So it feels very robotic, and there's not the human interaction. So perhaps the resource is there, but if veterans don't know that it's there, it's never going to be used. So what we need to do is we need to find these resources that are critical, break down all the barriers that are stopping veterans from being able to use them, and then get these veterans the healing that they need. Find them housing, find them jobs. So for example, you know, the VA healthcare system, they're doing a great job. And right now the VA healthcare system is actually the leader in whole health throughout the country.
Wow.
Yes. So that's something that's really amazing. They're going to integrative practices, and they're really trying to do whole person care. They're doing, treating the whole person rather than just prescriptive medicine. So of course, prescriptive medicine is still part of the VA health system, but now we have this other part that is whole health care.
Yeah. And of course, like the prescriptive medicine, time and a place. Absolutely.
Yes.
But if you don't have to,
yes,
then there are other options.
Yes.
That's brilliant.
Working on root causes and then behavior change to continue this health and well-being.
So what are some of those, like, let's focus on that a little bit then. What are some of those other services in that holistic approach? What can they be?
Okay, so in this whole health, we can do health and wellness coaching, which is not just the traditional life coaching. It's where you actually take a person and then you practice a lot of the skills that we teach people with the peer support training. It's a lot of empathetic listening. You're empowering the individual to then create their own plan that is small, but you make these small changes over time and it creates big results. And so all these practices in the integrative health world We take those that they're already doing in the VA system that is working, and we use principles and we pick and choose what is working and we use it out on the farm.
Brilliant. So you also may mention that there are barriers Yes. that veterans encounter. Briefly, what are some of those barriers that people will often run into?
So most of the time it's paperwork. It's the paperwork, it's the waiting, and then it's the unknown. So a lot of times the things that I hear from veterans that come to the farm is, I tried it, I filled out the paperwork, I never heard from them again. So they don't know where to go and what avenue to find the resources and actually get that filed correctly.
Right.
So then what we can do is in Whatcom County and Island County, we will refer them to the Veterans Service Office, and then they can help them.
Okay. And does growing veterans walk people through a lot of those same challenges at the same time?
It just depends. It's always on a case-by-case basis. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to create a resource map so that as we're doing the coffee check-ins and we're hearing the need, we're like, okay, perfect. We know exactly what resource they need to go to. This is who you need to talk to. This is who you need to call. Here's a card. So that's what I'm really trying to do, is create this all-encompassing resource map to where when someone has a need, I'm able to break down that barrier. If they don't have to search for the person, they don't have to try to do it on their own. We as a community can be there for veterans, and we can help them get the help that they need.
Brilliant. So let's come back to the farm a little bit more specifically now. You guys are doing what's called dirt therapy. Seems to be rather niche in the grand field of therapeutic services. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
So number one, do you think that dirt therapy is something that is increasing in popularity? And if so, why do you think that is?
I do for sure believe that. I think that there's just more research focused on nature. I just finished my master's degree in integrative health studies. And just by spending time and in-depth look at that, people are starting to see the benefits of nature. For example, Shinrin Yoku or forest bathing, just being out in nature, just being with the plants, after 5 minutes, you can see measurable results, decrease in cortisol levels, decrease in heart rate, and then decrease in blood pressure after being 5 minutes of that.
Is that just because we're like getting vitamin D and getting fresh air that's not being pushed through an AC unit, or?
You know, there are a few different theories. So there is the biophilia theory, and that is a peer-reviewed study by Wilson. And I believe that that was conducted in 1985 and then revisited in 2023.
Oh, wow.
But so this biophilia hypothesis theory, just it really looks into our innate sense to wanting to be with nature. We've come from nature. We spent most of our lives in nature. And it's just in the recent past that we started putting ourselves in these boxes and kind of like separating ourselves from nature. So it's like getting back to our roots. That's part of it.
No, and it makes sense. I remember the idea was proposed at one point, and it's somewhat unrelated, but I think it's similar in principle, where they were talking specifically about data and how in like 2012, all of a sudden the internet became mainstream. And all of a sudden you were giving people these, you know, mobile computers where they were constantly being inundated with tremendous amounts of data and information, the kinds that the human mind was not designed to understand. We weren't supposed to ever be exposed to that much data. I'm sure it's a similar thing when you're saying like, hey, our modern work life for so many folks are living in offices for 8 hours a day, completely devoid of meaningful social interaction, meaningful senses of achievement, and also the sun. Like, no wonder we start to see fallouts because of that.
Yeah, we're missing that key part of our being, of our person, of being a human. It's the connecting, it's partnership with not only each other, but with nature, with animals, with the land.
Yeah, and you don't have to be a granola chewing hippie
no.
to be on board with that.
No. Literally 5 minutes a day, go outside, look at the mountains, get your hands in the dirt. So there was one other peer-reviewed journal that I wanted to mention. It's called the Stress Reduction Theory. And so that was by Ulrich. He conducted the first study in 1983. And then it was re-studied in 2023 as well. And so with the stress reduction theory, that just has data that shows the cortisol levels decreasing. It shows the blood pressure decreasing, heart rate decreasing, just from that connection with nature, being out there. And then when you're out with trees, you get cytokines that are released, and then that's helping your system fight off infection and just keeping you healthy.
So I'm glad you're bringing up some of the research trends as well, because this is always something that interests mm-hmm. me. You've referenced two studies already, both of which are from the 80s.
Yes.
Then you mentioned two other studies, both of which were from 23.
Yes.
That's a 40-year gap in between. Yes. Why are we seeing, or are we seeing, a spike in dirt therapy, environmental, behavioral studies right now?
I really believe that it's a pendulum swing. So as soon as technology was first booming and we're really into this technological age, we just leaned on technology too hard and we forgot about this other part of being a human being. Mm. And then now, as we're so far into the technological age, we're starting to look back and realizing like, oh, maybe we're missing something. Mm-hmm. Maybe these really high rates of depression, maybe the isolation that people are facing and the loneliness is coming because we're forgetting something. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking back to the past and what worked in the past, and now we're grabbing that data.
So I want to touch a little bit on that. So obviously therapeutic trends have changed substantially, nonetheless, over the last 40 years, but of course over the last 80 years. Like, we used to have asylums, mm-hmm. and we don't really have those anymore. What are some of the therapeutic trends that were being offered to veterans that you think are going to go away in the coming decades?
Honestly, it's really hard to see that far into the future, but mm-hmm. I believe that there's a time and place for prescriptive medicine, of mm-hmm. course, but I believe that we are going to stop leaning so heavily on that, and we're going to start looking at more natural, more alternative, more integrative systems. So mm-hmm. how can we look at your whole person and see, okay, what is the actual root cause of this depression? Mm-hmm. What is the root cause of your anxiety? And then how can we work on the root cause? And then I think that as we're starting to work more on whole person care, it's going to shift that prescriptive medicine. Mm-hmm.
No, absolutely. I know one of the things that I've always been an advocate of is, one, though I don't show it, exercise. Huge mental changes happen once people start regularly exercising. The other thing is diet. Mm-hmm. Like, I know there's a whole thing right now. There's a video that's gone a little bit viral, but it's about breaking down what they do to flour before it even makes it into bread. It's why bread in Canada and the US is so oftentimes, well, it's just worse than European bread. Mm-hmm. And it's because they do all these treatments and it's got real physiological consequences on people and it makes you feel bad. And so if you're moving to more organic foods, again, you don't have to be a hippie to see that there is a real benefit to it.
Yeah. And I mean, the taste is better too. Yeah. I mean, you get a tomato that's out of the garden and you taste that versus something they're going to get from the store, completely different. Mm. Yeah.
So let's change gears a little bit, but still keeping an eye on that veteran therapeutics and veteran states, specifically around COVID. Because COVID kind of changed everything. Now people seem to view the world in a before COVID times and the post COVID times. How do you think veteran services, actually, better question, how did veterans do during COVID?
You know, I have a great answer for this because so I spent 12 years as a pararescueman in the Air Force. Mm. My last duty station from 2017 to 2020 was in Aviano, Italy. Ah. So not only was I separated from the military, you know, but then I was leaving a completely different country and coming back to the States.
Yeah.
So I separated in December of 2020. And so trying to get back to the States, to my home, was a nightmare. Mm-hmm. And so after 12 years of service, I left, came back to America, left guys that I'd been working with for the past 10 years, completely isolated, completely alone. And I'm not the only one that experienced that. So I came back to America, a new place where I knew no one. And then now I'm not allowed to interact with any other people.
Yeah.
So you're alone. You're trying to integrate back into a society that you don't really know because you've been in the military for so long. And then during COVID, you can't integrate into anything. Mm. So you're alone. You're confused. You have no purpose. That's what I faced when I came back.
That must have been entirely detrimental to what you needed at that time.
Yes. I needed connection and I needed to belong somewhere and I needed that sense of purpose. Mm.
And no wonder we just saw depression and anxiety rates spike for everyone across the nation once the lockdowns went on for longer than 2 weeks.
Yes.
So how do you see the fallout of COVID possibly changing the way that veteran communities are organized, if at all? Is this just kind of accelerated or increased the appreciation for the fellowship that is available these days?
I think it really, it just showed everyone how important it is to have human interaction, mm-hmm. have that connection, how healing that is, just having a conversation together in person instead of doing it via Zoom. Mm-hmm. We are getting to interact with each other, and it's very healing. And so I think that that really showed us that we really do need each other, and it takes a community for us to live and thrive. Mm-hmm.
So is it safe to say that you guys aren't going to be hosting your Friday coffee breaks over Zoom anytime soon?
We are not going to be doing that. We like it in person. And for us too, I like to keep it in person because what we're sharing there stays in the circle. Mm. So it's a place where people are allowed to be vulnerable and they're allowed to share what's going on. And in society, we don't really have that place, especially in the military. If you're vulnerable in the military, you're going to get in trouble or you're going to get pushed into a different MOS. Hmm.
Can we pick apart that a little bit?
Yes.
So there's a great trend these days for men specifically to increase their vulnerability, to be willing to be emotionally open. You have another side of people that are saying, well, you just want everyone to be weepy all the time and just share their emotions at the drop of a hat. It's got to be like a something in the middle. Historically, where have you found the veterans that are coming to Growing Veterans? Where do they land in that? Do they tend to be willing to open up when that time comes on Fridays, or are they a hard shell that needs time to slowly get used to their environment, to that fellowship that they find themselves in?
Yeah, it seems like at first people can be resistant. Mm. They're going to be closed because that's what they're used to. Mm. They spent all this time in the military where I'm okay, I'm fine, there's nothing wrong with me. Mm. And that's the right answer when you're in the military. And then now they're seeing these other veterans that are being honest. Like, I'm having a really hard time. I just went through a divorce. I'm struggling being a father. I'm struggling being a mother. So it's like people being open and honest. And as soon as one person has the strength and the courage to be vulnerable, that opens and sets the stage for other people to also be vulnerable. Mm. And it's just a really beautiful thing.
So can you tell us a little bit about how you got involved with Growing Veterans? Logan had made mention that he started coming to Growing Veterans and then that his frequency increased and then he... 6 months later, he found himself involved in the leadership. Were you also participating in Growing Veterans as a volunteer before getting inducted into the leadership?
Yes, I was. So I was a firefighter paramedic before, mm-hmm. before I started volunteering at Growing Veterans. I was dealing with PTSD that I didn't realize I had. Mm-hmm. So I resigned from the fire department. I started my master's degree. And as I was going through school, I was finding my own healing through nature and the outdoors. And then I just randomly stumbled upon Growing Veterans through the Vet Center website. Mm. So I saw it, I watched the video, and it really touched me just seeing like what they're actually doing, like creating that culture of community. So bringing that community together. So I saw that, I went out to the farm and volunteered, and it just so happened that they had an internship position opening up. Mm. So I volunteered, then became an intern, and then I was an intern for about a year. I finished my master's degree and then the opening came up for the executive director role. And then I applied and then I found myself there March 3rd.
All right. It's a pretty fast journey, all things considered.
Yes. Yeah.
So one of the things that, and I know this is true for businesses as well, but it seems especially so for non-for-profits where so much of that vitality and that long-lasting nature comes from is from the networks that they build around themselves, from the connections that they build into the community. You've made mention of Woods. Who else have been historically really valuable partners for Growing Veterans, and what have they done?
So amazing partners. So we're part of Task Force 12, the Spirit of 12 with the Seahawks. And so it is 12 veteran organizations. And so we partner together and we do fundraising. And so that's 12 organizations that really support Washington State in general. Mm. Up here in the Whatcom County area, we have Brigadoon Service Dogs that we'll partner with. There's Animals as Natural Therapy. And so any produce that we wouldn't eat ourselves, we're not going to donate to the food banks. So instead of letting that produce go to waste, we found Animals as Natural Therapy. Mm. And we go to them and we donate all of that produce to their animals.
That's great.
Yes. And then we have Superfeet, which is an amazing company that's actually in Ferndale, Washington. Mm-hmm. They've been great supporters of us, not only with volunteers, but then also financially. And there's many other partners that we have on our website that is just too many to share right now.
Sorry. No, of course. That's a good answer. So inversely, growing veterans, they give a lot of food to the food banks. Who are the people that you guys support?
So as far as who is getting the food from the food bank?
Or? Yeah, whether it's the food bank or you guys are partnering with other organizations, bringing them to the farms, giving them opportunities. What does that look like?
So actually today we just had a meeting with Habitat for Humanity, and really? We're trying to figure out how once a quarter we're going to start taking our Friday coffee check-in, and we're going to go to one of the job sites and we'll just drink our coffee and then we're going to help build with them.
That's fun.
Yeah. And it's just having that one meeting with them. It's such an amazing organization, and what they're doing in Whatcom County is just beautiful and amazing. So just continuing those partnerships, because no nonprofit can survive forever alone. Mm-hmm. We all need to come together and just help each other thrive.
No, that's absolutely right. So I think I only have enough time for one more question for you. But if you wanted to give a message to a veteran that's struggling in Whatcom County right now, what would you want them to hear at this moment?
You are not alone. You belong. You are loved. Those three things can really change someone's life. And then come to the farm in any way, shape, or form. Just get out there. You can come for 10 minutes. You can come for 4 hours. But you're not alone. You're loved and you belong.
Perfect. Well, Cody, where can people find you?
So you can find us in Linden. We're right off the Guide Meridian and King Tut. And if you're driving north to Linden, you look off to the left. It says Keep Growing. That's us right there. And you can find us on our website at growingveterans.org. And if you go to Facebook or LinkedIn or Instagram, you can find us also just through searching Growing Veterans.
Perfect. Well, Cody, thank you for joining me today.
Cole, thank you so much for having us.
All right. Well, I hope you, dear listeners, have enjoyed this episode as much as I have. Be sure to tune in again sometime soon, because we're going to have Logan back and we're going to be picking apart, let's see here, the myths and unpleasant realities about growing veterans in the field that you guys are in. Awesome. So I'm sure that'll be fun. Well, until that time, take care and be well, folks. See you next time.